Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents How to Build a Boat by Elaine Feeney, narrated by Gary Furlong. There are some times when I'm in a big forest and I don't know where I'm going, but then somehow I come to the top of a hill and I can see everything more clearly. When that happens, it is really exciting. Mariam Mirzarkhani. Prologue. Jamie said, "When I grow up, I will be as tall as these trees." And he sprawled fast like a salamander along a trunk. He climbed to the first branch when Owen said, "Whoa, Jamie, careful!" and lifted the boy back to the ground. "Owen," Jamie said, "did you know that resin from trees makes arrow tops? And they're so hard, they can go right through you?" "No, I didn't know that," Owen said. Jamie nodded furiously, then dragged his damp nose along the red sleeve of his anorak, saying, "Did you know that trees turn into all the things?" Tall trees were Jamie's current favourite. The Scots pine matured fast, lived for centuries, and housed red squirrels. Jamie loved the colour red. He also loved patterns, books with dust jackets, cats, rain that came with wind, the curvature of objects, Edgar Allan Poe, and rivers. Jamie hated sunny days, and the red sky that slung about the trees today was a good sign that a shower threatened. He liked rain pelting his face, soaking the layers of his clothes until they were sopping and heavy on his skin. Winter was Jamie's favourite season, November his favourite month, for November was predictable. Nothing happened but a heavy darkness covering the town like a weighted blanket, and the sideways rain was ferocious. Winter was bare and unburdened. Leaves disappeared from the big oaks and the River Brew. An unspectacular river, grey on a grey day, blue when the sun shone, became so white on a day of blanket fog you could not see the opposite blank, an infinite and uninhabitable space. The white fog excited Jamie, like an infinity of ghosts, though he did not believe in ghosts. Infinity excited him, he believed in infinity, and ferocious things terrified him, setting alerts flashing in the crevices of his busy brain. Soon Jamie and Owen passed the stone corbelled ice house. Its earthen domed roof was overgrown with tufts of grass and knotweed. Here the river bends and carves into the horizon, and Jamie liked to walk this far to get close to the estuary. And though he had never been on a boat to feel its energy beneath him, suddenly he was filled with an urge to do so. They watched a man sail past in a curragh and wave at them. Jamie considered whether the boat looked more like a black slug or an upside-down sea monster. He settled on likening it to a pirate hat he had to wear last year at Terry's 6th birthday party, just shortly after Terry arrived in Emery. The party hat's thin elastic pinched Jamie under his chin until it burned his skin. He ran outside screaming, and eventually sat in silence at the end of their garden, watching rumbling cement trucks roll past to new estates, until Owen came and rescued him. And in turn, rescued the party. Terry's mam was saying, "I'm so sorry," and trying desperately to hug Jamie, his face mashed up against her. He spun on the heels of his wellies and said, "Can we come back tomorrow and go swimming in the river, Owen? I think if we swim out far," he said, busy waving his arms behind his head, "we can get to America. I'll wear armbands." Then suddenly he grabbed Owen by the back pocket of his denims. "Watch out, Owen, your laces are open." And he thought about kids in school who called them lacers. "Thanks," Owen said. "Now shh, or you'll wake the river." And he put his finger to his lips and felt a sudden tightness across his chest. He unzipped his jacket and bent down to tie up his runners. Jamie said, "Rivers do not sleep. Not the River Brew, anyways." And he blew his lips out and said, "Brew" again. He liked the way it vibrated. "It bursts sometimes, did you know that? My teacher said when that happens, it makes a mess. And did you know the brew means crashing?" Jamie said, slamming the heels of his hands together. "Did you know that? My teacher said that is what it means, and that it is good because rivers are important, but also bad because if it is strong..." He dragged the nose again. "It might crush fish and rocks and boats. That's not good." It was way not good if everyone was gobbled up. He looked at the river and said, "We're crushed." Owen was distracted by the band of pressure across his chest. "And I looked up brew in the Irish-English-English-Irish dictionary, and it means hostile too," Jamie said, stopping abruptly and pulling at some eyelashes catching his eye. "We've never been to a hostel, Owen." Jamie spoke to Owen at length about various scenarios in any given moment, yet for a chatty child, his teacher said he did not like being among other children for sustained periods of time. She also said that when he had something to say, it was important he spoke fast in that very moment. Owen argued that this is the way of all children, but nevertheless, monthly targets were drawn up. Turn-taking, wait and listen time, develop and maintain peer relationships. Still, Jamie was often captured by something and blown off guard, and there were numerous events in his life that, while often beautiful and spontaneous, were intense. Owen said, "We've never been to a hostel because there's many people crammed together in dorms. You'd hate it." "How would you know if I've never been?" Jamie replied. "Good question. But I've been," Owen said, "and they're very packed." "Like when you were a boy stuffed up with other boys in school?" "Yes," Owen said. "Like dorms and too much noise for a busy boy like you to sleep. Besides, you love tents. Now, how about I bring you to the swimming pool tomorrow?" But unlike rainwater, Jamie hated the public swimming pool. When Jamie began to speak in his third year, after making hardly a sound at all until then, he spoke in full and elaborate sentences, mostly poetry, and mostly the poetry of Edgar Allan Poe. He had found Poe in the library and was drawn to a bird perched on a blood-red cover. Jamie loved the library, the hum of the lights, the red carpet, the plastic yellow furniture. It was warm and smelled of feet. He gobbled up books, and so his grandmother Marie took him every week, and afterwards for tea in the hotel on the square with biscuits wrapped in tartan plastic. Marie was drawn to books with women on the cover, and sometimes they were accompanied by men with loose ties around their shirtless necks. And Jamie could never figure out how she read so many pages in 1 week and managed to clean every house in Emery. Walking home, he'd sing out, "Whether tempters sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore, desolate yet all undaunted on this desert land enchanted," until Marie banned Poe. On the day of Jamie's birth, Marie rushed to Christ's College to alert her son that his girlfriend had gone into early labour. It was an oddly sunny day for February, and Owen was bored in a final year Latin class. All spring, everyone was saying, "Oh, your exams are just around the corner." But for Noel Doyle and Owen O'Neill, this turned out to be untrue. Noel deferred her exams at the request of the girls' school, who insisted pregnant students did not attend class due to the message it gave to others. Her promising swimming career was paused. When Marie banged at the class door, Owen legged it, leaving his school bag and a lunchbox full of chicken sandwiches behind. He never returned, for in the hectic moments after giving birth, Noel Doyle's blood pressure rose. Machines beeped and the baby, swaddled like a warm shoulder of pork, was handed to Owen as Noel was taken to the intensive care unit, where 55 minutes later, surrounded by her large family, she died. Her family tumbled out through the doors in blind anger and screamed at Owen, who held the baby tightly in his arms. One of Noel's older sisters, the one with corkscrew curls, spat at him, then lunged at him in a half-hug, half-punch, common with grief until security guards separated them. And he was still holding the baby when the family walked out of the hospital without looking back, or noticing that underneath the small hat on his head, Jamie O'Neill had a mass of auburn hair and furrowed brow, just like his mother. One New Year's Eve, close to the countdown, Owen was sat by Jamie on the sofa. He muted the telly and watched an old clip of Noel competing in a swimming gala. There had been hundreds of clips. Noel laughing after school. Noel walking in the woods. Noel soaked to the skin on a picnic. Noel pulling faces outside the cinema. Noel painted like a Dalmatian at Halloween, with a black and white hair wig. But after a rare night out with a soccer club, Owen, angry and lonely and drunk in his small dark living room, deleted the phone's contents. After which he placed his phone on the laminate floor of the 2-up, 2-down and smashed it hard under the heel of his foot. After which he vomited. After which he passed out until morning, when he woke frantic and pacing about with a dry mouth and a pounding headache and in a lather of sweat and overwhelmed with a desire to disappear. But Jamie woke, crept downstairs and began asking so many questions that Owen had no choice but to recover and get on with the getting on a young boy requires. And for years after, Owen replayed each deleted clip in his mind before he'd fall into a fretful sleep, until the clips grew so hazy and faint, and there came a time when Owen couldn't visualize Noel's face at all. And though he tried to rebuild it, smile, red hair, eyes, freckled nose, wide shoulders, parts of her vanished, until it was finally impossible to recreate her. The swimming gala clip had survived as it had been uploaded to her school's website. So Jamie, watching his father's face change, grabbed the phone to look for himself. And as 2013 arrived, the year when he would turn 7, he met his mother, all 2 minutes and 8 seconds of her for the very first time. Noelle warms up by the side of the pool, whirls her arms and stretches her shoulders back, lifts dark bug goggles onto her broad face, fixes her hair under a red swimming hat, plucks her red Speedo costume from her thighs, does it once more, hops three times on the balls of her feet, finally moves her head side to side. The spectators are filled to the roof in the stands, mostly in school uniform, screaming her name, as though their lives depend on this one mad brief moment. And she dives, and moves quick like a red admiral in the summer sky. Jamie watches it every day, and just before the end where she punches the air, he pauses the clip, then he plays it, and she turns to Jamie and smiles. Owen said, "Careful running, not too fast, Jamie." The early life of the boy had perplexed Owen. His own boyhood experiences revealed a crude blueprint, and soon Marie gathered books in the library for him, too. But nothing felt right. The closest he'd come to a book making sense was Unconditional Parenting by Alfie Kohn. The synopsis was agreeable. You're a parent, deal with it. Love unconditionally. No star charts, no nonsense rewards. The tall trees closed in and Owen had a sudden urge to leave the woods, filling with intrusive thoughts about catastrophic moments, as was his habit, which meant he went out of his way to protect Jamie from accidents and accidentally from the world. They walked along the yellowing path quicker now, the boy bouncing, and he ran ahead and hugged a tree tightly, and this gave Owen time to catch his breath. Jamie said, "Owen, on the law of averages, boys break fewer bones than you think." "Not sure that's a true statistic, Jamie," Owen replied. "And let's not chance it." "I'm not sure the statistics on this per se," Jamie said.
"Per se?"
"Yes. Latin, buyer in itself or themselves, intrinsically. It is not these facts per se that are important. But it might be nice to climb a tree and look out across Emery. It is a myth, what you always say."
"What?"
Owen asked. The young lose their lives in strange and unimaginable ways. Owen said, "Another mouthful, but slightly more accurate." Jamie scanned Owen's face for clues. This was a finite sentence. He learned this about human beings early in life. Sometimes people just stopped talking. Soon Jamie grew tall and into the triangular shape of his mother, unusually broad for a young teenager. He had no desire to jump into the river or climb a tree. His mind wandered into other spaces. They did not go to the woods so much now, as it was hard to get Jamie off screens and away from the large board in his room, where he worked out the interconnection between much of what the day had given to him, including delights and problems. But there remained one developing obsession together: watching films late into the night. And on nights when Owen falls asleep, Jamie lifts his dad's arm up, and escaping from his clutch, he throws an old blanket over him before creeping upstairs to bed. 1. Jamie's school uniform hung on his bedroom door, and the plastic covering was pinned with a small tag that read, "For collection, Jamie O'Neill, no charge. Best of luck, Jamie, X." All of Jamie's clothes were laundered before first wear. Vest, jocks, red, good, socks, red, first sock, second, Dr. Seuss, cat, hat, elastic tight, wait. Turn on Maria Mirzakhani first, wait, think. Think first, James. If you're to ever whip up, laugh at yourself for saying whip up. Note the sound of the word ship, cool whip. Family Guy, repeat it, cool whip, rhymes with ship up, good. Favorite color, red. Cats also, the colors of them, fur, all of them. Marmalade ones, hairless ones, trousers, yes. Yes, good pleat. Good. Belt. Tight. Tighter. New hole. Not great. Owen insisted on doing with a fork. Level of exasperation with Owen. 10. Breathe. Shirt. White. Good. Tie. Red. Horrible. I do not like green eggs and ham. Ham. I do not like. I do not. Make your bed. I do not like. Get up. Check the sky. Get up. Put your feet on the ground, like Owen says. Circadian rhythm. Ground yourself. Good. Get up. Leg hairs. Count. Do that first. Settle yourself. Body in space. Don't sing. Oh, sing. Get up then. Make it all even. All of it. Must be even or threes. Even or threes. Good man. Don't wear the red socks. Do not violate college rules on the first day. I wish I could complain to a manager. Tell him I don't want to go to school. What is the point? Jamie played the day out in his mind. And as his bedroom filled with rain sounds from a sensory machine Owen picked up in Argos, the walls lifted to pink, reddened, and reassured him that he was floating inside a lava lamp. He wished the day, Monday, being an even date, 26, in the year, however, of an odd number, 19, and an odd age, perhaps the oddest and most unlucky age of all, 13, the day would go according to plan. Since he was born at 3 p.m, 3 was his lucky number, and he whispered, "Good morning," 3 times, stretched, then ran his hand along his leg and counted new hairs, 5, 6, 7, 7. An odd number was no cause for celebration, unless it was 3. So he traced along a warm purple vein and pinched a hair between his finger and thumb and plucked it out of his body, a body which was dangerously volcanic, like Kilauea in Hawaii, a body that was erupting. He climbed out of bed with his arms stretched backwards, gripping the ladder like a gymnast before dismount. Jamie then ran his hand on neat piles of books on his bottom bunk. When he started primary school, a slew of birthday invites arrived, polite pattern of parents, but soon they trickled to single figures. And by year 2, all the colourful invites stuffed in his school bag with monkeys or clowns and elastic writing in different coloured inks stopped altogether. Aside from new boy Terry's outlier, and that had proved another disaster, at which time the bottom bunk of Jamie's bed, once considered for sleepovers, was relegated / elevated for Jamie's books of great importance. The books were left in piles along the bare mattress like tortoises with meticulous handwritten notes pressed on their immaculate covers. Date and place of publication. Date started. Date completed. Initial reaction and, most pressing, Jamie O'Neill's star ratings. The star ratings were harsh, and among the piles, only one book received 5 hand-drawn Jamie O'Neill stars, The Complete Tales and Poems of Edgar Allan Poe. From his bedroom window, he scanned the morning sky over the identical tiled roofs. Marie's car was gone from next door, and he stared at the sky ablaze with red. Shepherd's warning, shepherd's warning. Red sky at night, delight. Jamie switched on his computer and sat in his pajamas, plucking the remaining hairs from his warm leg. Leg hair perplexed him. Eyebrows stopped sweat, and Marie explained how pubic hair safeguards against infection, but he could not understand why he had to grow leg hairs. They were a nuisance, much like hairs on his top lip. Mariam Mirzakhani's lecture on dynamics moduli spaces of curves opened on YouTube. She appeared, smiling. "These chalks are great," she said. And Jamie smiled back at the woman with the pixie haircut and green jumper, who made him feel safe as she scribbled on the board and spoke in an inspired flurry about flows of defined bundles while drawing beautiful shapes. She was the first woman Fields medalist, a mathematician who wanted to be a writer. And when she worked, her daughter said, it was as though she were painting. On Jamie's bedroom whiteboard were lists and extensive drawings of trees and bees and mad shapes of wheels crudely shaded in with black labelled Mercury. And one list in tiny writing which read, Perpetual Motion Machines, Design Notes, Binder Under Desk, Construction Notes to be completed. Perhaps we'll have to consider downgrade to a motion machine that relies on a tiny amount of outside pressure to start motion. Riemann surfaces, Noel swimming, kinetic energy created by a swimmer, billiards tables, never-ending ball motion, avoid the pockets, stuff the pockets, create a table without holes, various shades of red, Jamie red, inspired by Eve Klein blue and Vanta black. Shakespearean insults, add to list daily. Pine cones as predictors of rain, put more on windowsill, give some to Marie. Cinnipid wasps and galls on oak trees. Puberty in volcanoes and hairs, three-dimensional jigsaws, Eiffel Tower next. Where the energy of a dead person is stored. Recreating energy. Footnote. Colors and originality of color invention is including, but not limited to, the intersection between art, design, science, nature, and physics. Next door, Owen was restless, having spent the night tossing about the bed's flat sheet, which ended up on the floor. The fibre pin heads of the bare mattress scratched and inflamed his skin. He picked up his phone and dropped it so many times throughout the night that he couldn't recall, and he was good at keeping count. His whole life had turned into measurements and timings, and while Sunday nightitis was a fever he was used to, this was different. Jamie was about to begin secondary school, and Owen was filled with whirling moments of the boy at different stages of life. He tried for hours to remember the first day he'd lost a tooth or his first step. He thought of the days that the boy never stopped chatting, and the times he'd not listened back or was short-tempered. And his regrets, coupled with anxiety, had kept him awake until he settled on a memory of Jamie making a daisy chain one June evening out on the green, and gifting it to the scrawny neck of a stray cat. "Jamie, lad, you okay?" Owen said, sticking his head around his son's door. "Heard you rummaging. What are you up to at this hour?" The uniform's grey material pooled on the carpet. The oversized blazer with its motto belonged to a different era. Owen wanted to return it to the shop and say there was some mistake. He pulled the pin from the plastic and retrieved the note. Jamie said, "Yes, Owen. I'm okay." "Big day, eh?" Owen said, folding the pink laundry tag over. He regretted his words. The build-up was the worst thing that could happen. Birthday, Christmas, a trip, anything that incurred a countdown. "Owen," Jamie said. "Yes?" "I've been thinking about the route." "Want us to take the van?" Owen said. "We can." "No," Jamie said. "But the streets raced in my mind, and I noticed that Marie has gone out cleaning already."
"Did you want to say goodbye?"
"No. She said, good luck, Jamie, yesterday."
Jamie stopped dead.
Owen rubbed his eyes again. "You'll be okay. I promise." "You can't make that promise, Owen. Maybe we should just take the van. I can drop you."
"No,"
Jamie said.
"Fair enough," Owen said.
"Owen?"
"Yes.
I'm glad there's no women in the college."
Owen laughed and said, "You'll regret saying that."
"I will not,"
Jamie said. "What are you watching?" Owen said.
"I'm trying to figure out if Mirzakhani can help me apply the laws of surface geodynamics to build my machine and to get..." "I thought you decided to let this go," Owen said.
"No,
you decided I should let it go. If I can get to the stage in the swimming pool when Noelle was going at such speed, then I'll figure out how to replicate her energy output, or just create a machine that moves at the same speed in a continual motion, then maybe..."
"Maybe what?"
Jamie stopped again and grabbed a clump of his hair in a tight fist. Owen lifted his son's hand from his hair and circled the boy's palm with his index finger. "She's not coming back, Jamie. Maths or machines won't bring her back." Jamie tugged his hand free and he banged the space bar, and Mirzakhani moved and drew a kind of lotus flower. Then she smiled. Jamie paused the screen again and shouted,
"Of course she's not coming back, Owen! I'm not a fool! This is not some irrationality!"
"I know it's not an irrationality. Just don't want you to get your hopes up."
"My hopes?"
Jamie said. "Whatever you're trying to do. Perpetual motion machines, your mam, energy." Owen yawned and squeezed the little ball he had made of the laundry tag. Jamie hit the space bar a third time, and Mirzakhani continued talking.
"Fine, be like this, but for fuck's sake, Jamie, you can't meet her."
The blood rushed from Owen's head and the room spun.
"I know you miss her," he said,
softer now.
"How can I miss someone I've never met?" Jamie said.
Grief was profoundly different for both humans. One felt an intense anger he had never recovered from. The other knew something was missing, a vacuum to where a mother should fit, and he had a fixed determination to fill it. Owen changed course and said, "Jamie, perpetual motion machines violate the first and second laws of thermodynamics."
"I agree, but it is possible to build a machine that never stops. I know it's possibly impossible to build one that relies on nothing."
Owen relaxed. It was the first time Jamie had conceded in this argument.
"But maybe atmospheric pressure, or natural energy."
Jamie scratched a bite on the back of his hand. It bled.
"Maybe, but today is about making some friends, and you have enough on your plate."
"No, and yes," Jamie said flatly.
Owen replied,
"We know energy cannot be created or destroyed, only transformed. A perpetual motion machine would have to produce work without energy input.
I just don't want you to get your hopes up."
"Yes, Owen, and an isolated system will move toward a state of disorder. I never get my hopes up." Jamie got it. He just didn't want to get it. Noelle had never stopped moving from the first minute he had met her on screen. She was in a constant and limited motion.
"I'll leave you to it," Owen said,
as he gently closed his son's bedroom door.
"Love you,"
Jamie said.
"Yes. Yes, you do."
Jamie went back to his computer screen. He was drawn to the loops on the board in white chalk that Mirzakhani was crossing. She had uncovered brilliant universal patterns in things that excited Jamie, and he was comforted by the idea that dynamical systems were as arbitrary as the human heart firing versus the human heart misfiring. But for now, all practical application of theories and how he might use them for his machine eluded the boy. On this random Monday, just moments before his first day of secondary school, Jamie O'Neill knows his mother's liver enzymes elevated and that a complex system overheated in her young body in those precious and devastating moments after giving birth to him, as was first determined in labour by her proteinuria
and he knows from his research that her urinary protein would be high. She might have had a low platelet count, a bad pain, that in turn she would have been given infusions of labetalol and magnesium sulfate, MgSO4, which in turn should have decreased her blood pressure, but her organs had already begun to fail, starting with her kidneys and ending with her brain. What Jamie doesn't know is what Noelle Doyle's first thoughts were when she saw him, and for how many minutes she held him, or if she held him at all. And most pressingly, what went through her mind in those very moments. He intends, / wants to prove that the probability of connected cycles between all of his life's events and the energy that he obsesses with, and M-theory to perpetual motion machines and infinity, means that there is an above-average probability that there exists a complex web of interconnectedness of everyone who had ever loved him, with everyone that would love him. And he is the link. And even the energy of those whom he hasn't met is circling about the planet. Even the energy of those unknown who will find him through his life. And that as Earth is a carved surface, some journeys would create original geodesics, and every Jamie journey could, in probability, connect many random sets of events and compulsions. But also, somewhere in the boy's mind was a mortal fear that culminated in planning each day at great length and not leaving things to chance. Because losing one parent was a tragedy, losing two would be careless. It was 6:30 a.m. Jamie O'Neill would have made it to London on time for morning classes, never mind the 2,816 steps to Christ's College. Exactly. 2. Nervous? Paul Mann asks his wife hoarsely. Tess stood looking out of their bedroom window, searching the river. Looks like another good one, she said, glancing over the tall trees as mackerel clouds slipped between the green tops. Paul said, it's to turn. Right, she said quietly. You sure you're okay? Yes, Tess said. Don't overthink it. First day back in the beginning of term always makes you nervous, Tessie. It's just apprehension, Tess said, shivering into herself. She rubbed her hands quickly along her arms. There was a nip to the autumn air. A fat crow perched beside another on the telephone wire beneath their window. The wire stretched down under their weight. Tess had been feeling panic for months now. Panic when she woke, panic before sleep. She'd blamed brandy for making her heart race, beer for making her groggy, Xanax for spacing her out, panic from adjusting her antidepressants. She'd eaten carelessly over the summer months, a seesaw of binging sugar, then intermittent fasting with no routine or motivation. Mostly she blamed the injections, the up and down of it all. Bursting out in tears in one moment and in another, mad feelings of overwhelming elation flooding her. It was an unsettling seesawing. I don't care, it's not for me. What's for you won't pass you. And then, mostly, who deserves a child anyway? State the world as in. Until one thought dominated. Who'd bring a child into this world? It's normal, Paul said, sitting up. He rested his head against the velour headboard. The thing with you, Tessie, is, and I've read about this. Paul Mann rarely ever missed an opportunity to tell someone a personal feature he noticed in that moment. An interpolation he backed up from a book he had read, with a title he could never remember. Thing is, he said, you're always like this on the first day back, worse than the students. Then, he said as he clicked his fingers, you're grand. He folded his freckled arms. By evening you're back in the swing of it. You work yourself up so much, Tessie. They're just kids. You're right, Tess said in a thin whisper. Yes, you're right. And then he was silent, and this denoted agreement. The last time she was at work in Christ's College, Tess was pregnant. Early. 8 weeks, 6 days, 4 hours. Tess watched over the birds. As long as I've known you, you worry. By October you'll be floored and that'll put paid to your anxiety. You'll be right as rain then. Right as rain? Or floored? Tess said. Floored, Tessie. So floored you won't have time for anxiety. He puffed up two pillows and fixing them behind his freckled shoulders, he sat up. A white feather came free and floated onto the floorboards where it lay quivering. The feather steadied itself. Duck or goose, she considered, which reminded her of a greasy roasted bird sat in the bowl Paul's mother served Christmas dinner on. Every year the same faces at her dinner table. Every year the same ugly platter with large sunflowers handed down for dead fowl. Mind the boys, she'd say. Girls can mind themselves. She would kiss Tess twice, awkwardly, like on a French film.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?